His master said to him, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful over a little, I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master." Matthew 25:23. Hi, I'm Rob West. That passage reminds us that God expects us to be faithful stewards of the resources He gives us. That means taking responsibility. What does that look like with our investments? Brian Mumbert joins us today to talk about it. Then we have lots of great listener questions ahead, but we won't be taking your live calls today because this program is pre-recorded. This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. Well, it's great to have Brian Mumbert with us. Brian's the Vice President for Regional Sales at Timothy Plan, a pioneer in faith-based investing and an underwriter of this program. Brian, great to have you back with us.
Thank you, Rob. Great to be here.
Brian, let's start with why you think responsibility is an important quality for Christians to develop.
Well, Rob, ultimately, we are responsible to God, our Creator, for everything that He's given us. I mean, He gave us life. He allows us to be stewards of the earth that He has given us, and we have the responsibility to cultivate and keep that. And then as a parent, every day I'm responsible to what God has given me in my family as I guide them towards Christ. And really to abdicate this responsibility would be to go against what God has for us.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right and well said. So then how does that responsibility, Brian, apply to money management?
I know many of your listeners have probably heard this before, but there's over 2,300 verses in the Bible that talk about money. It's more than any other subject, and obviously God truly knew what He was doing when He put all that in there to guide us as Christians, and He knew the trouble that we might encounter with being responsible with the money that He gave us. And we also know, of course, in Proverbs 22, that the borrower is slave to the lender, and as Christians, we should strive to live without debt in order that we can most freely give to those who need it.
Yeah, let's stay in God's word for a moment and unpack this idea of responsibility. What other passages come to mind on this topic?
Well, Rob, one of the main passages of Scripture that Timothy Plan was founded on is 1 Timothy 5:8, and that says, "If anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for members of his own household, he is denied the faith." And then for me personally, I love in Mark chapter 8, verse 36, it says in these very prophetic words, "What does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his soul?" And those are two that mean a lot to me. One, for, of course, providing for my family, but two, to understand that there is nothing in this world that is worth forfeiting my soul for, especially money.
Absolutely. So then how does that responsibility apply to investing? And let's start generally.
Generally, as Christians, you know, we are called to provide for our family, for our household. That was what I had referenced in 1 Timothy 5:8. God has entrusted us to be stewards of more than money, but also in stewardship of our money to help advance the kingdom on earth. We all saw how it turned out for the rich young ruler in the book of Matthew, who had money to provide for everyone, for his family, for generations, but was unwilling to give this away and ultimately walked away dejected as he could not follow Jesus.
No doubt about that. So let's take that then one level deeper and talk about how this responsibility applies to even the specific companies we invest in from your perspective.
You know, from our perspective, we've always viewed shareholder as ownership of a company. If I own a share, I'm part owner of that company. And at that point, do these companies prey on the addictions of their users for profit, whether it be things like tobacco or alcohol, or as we enter into the sports season, especially football, starting with gambling? Am I comfortable as a Christian profiting from these things that are contrary to my beliefs? And finally, do these companies act in some way that actually brings good into the world, as opposed to just being here purely for profit?
Yeah, and Brian, there's more options than ever for Christians who want to align their values with their investments in the way you just described, isn't there?
Absolutely. There's more available now outside of just even Timothy Plan, and we're thrilled that there's just more ways for Christians to invest with their values.
Well, Timothy Plan has been a pioneer in this way of investing for a long, long time, and we're grateful for our partnership. Brian, thanks for stopping by today with some great insights.
Thank you, Rob.
Folks, we want you to take responsibility, and we're talking to ourselves as well as followers of Christ. It's what God has called us to do, and it's what we want to encourage you in as you manage His resources day to day. We were joined today by Brian Mumbert. He's Vice President for Regional Sales at Timothy Plan, an underwriter of this program. You can learn more at timothyplan.com. That's timothyplan.com. We'll be right back.
For your walk with Jesus, I'm David Wolin with Haven Today, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. Few family conversations are as awkward as one that revolves around inheritance. If the world of estate litigation is any measurement, those kinds of conversations tend to go south, exposing hearts that value money and possessions too much. Countless families have been destroyed over material possessions, and it's even more sad when you consider there's a far greater inheritance, the inheritance of eternal resurrection life. In 1 Peter, the apostle praises God for this gift, which he describes as an inheritance that can never perish, spoil, or fade. It's greater by far than any fortune or real estate or business interest, because it will never run out. And there's enough for every member of God's family. Try out Anchor Devotional today. Visit getanchor.com.
Paying too much for health insurance? Frustrated by high deductibles and increasing premiums? There's a better way. Christian Healthcare Ministries. CHM is a Christian community delivering a faith-based solution to the high costs of healthcare. Take control over your healthcare costs with a program from CHM that could save you up to 40%. Learn more and enroll today at chministries.org/faithfi. That's chministries.org/faithfi.
There have been people in our nation who have been pining for wickedness. As we read through Romans 1, you see over and over, God gave them over. God gave them over. But what is happening is evidence of abandonment. We need to understand that is included within the wheelhouse, if you will, of God judging a people.
Join Abraham Hamilton III on the Hamilton Corner, weekdays at 5 p.m. Central on AFR.
Have you ever wondered where your money goes when you deposit it in a bank? Christian Community Credit Union believes in helping advance God's kingdom through everyday financial transactions. For over 67 years, they have provided values-aligned banking solutions to thousands of Christians and ministries. Consider Christian Community Credit Union as your banking institution by visiting joinchristiancommunity.com. Membership eligibility required. Each account is insured up to $250,000. This institution is not federally insured.
Do you feel like your hands are tied with debt, preventing you from serving God? If you have credit card debt, Christian credit counselors can help. Through our debt management program, we can get you out of credit card debt about 80% faster while honoring your debt in full. For more information on how Christian credit counselors can help, visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org. Or call 800-557-1985. 800-557-1985.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Our team is away today, so don't call in, but we lined up some great questions in advance, and we'll be going to those here in just a moment. Let me also remind you that the advice that I give each day on this program is general in nature. We offer principles and ideas that apply at a high level. They are not personalized, so that's why you should always seek professional financial advice. And if you'd like to find a professional who shares your values, we, of course, here at Faith and Finance Live recommend the Certified Kingdom Advisor designation. These are men and women who've met high standards, and they've been trained to bring a biblical worldview of financial decision-making. You can find one at faithfi.com. We're going to head south. Before we head to Fort Lauderdale, we're going to begin in Miami with John. Go ahead, sir.
Yes. Hello. Can you hear me?
Hi. Yes, sir.
Hi. Okay. What I'm calling, I turned 73 in September, and I have to start doing that automatic, what do they call it, withdrawal?
Required minimum, yes, sir.
Yeah, the required minimum. Now, I went through the Christian advisor, and he told me to get the Yeah, he told me he can get me, like, well, I can go from 5%, then I could just investing in what he has, and then but I could take the money, and he would take the money out of my account, and then he would just invest it in what ministries I want. And whatever, how much money I wanted to do. I just wondering, well, if is there any other way, or that's a good way to keep from paying. I don't use the money. It's like $238,000.
Yeah.
$328,000.
Okay.
And I don't.
Yeah. So if I understand correctly, you've got an IRA with a couple of hundred thousand in it. You don't need it right now. So you're not needing to live off of it. You have other income. You're about to be 73. So that required minimum is going to kick in. That's the amount the IRS, based on your account balance and your life expectancy, says you have to pull out every year. And when you take it out, it's taxable as income to you. The only way to avoid that tax is through something called a qualified charitable distribution, which allows you to take out up to $105,000 for 2024, but you certainly don't have to take that much. What you could do, because it counts toward your required minimum, the qualified charitable distribution, you could take only an amount as a charitable distribution equal to your required minimum. And what that would do is allow you to give it to a charity or ministry or church of your choice, satisfy your required minimum, which you didn't need anyway. And the best thing is that not only are you giving to God's kingdom, but it's not going to be added to your taxable income. So you will pay no tax on it. You won't get a deduction on it, but you'll get it out of the IRA as the IRS is requiring, but without adding it to your taxable income. So the ministry or charity gets more, you satisfy the required minimum, and you pay no tax. Is that what you're looking to do?
Yeah. So he said something about that I can't do it, but if I went through his plan, he could do it. Is that true, or do I?
Well, if you have check writing privileges, what my CPA has told me is that literally you can write a check directly to the charity if you have check writing privileges against the IRA. Some people do. So basically what happens is you have what's called a custodian. This is the firm that you get your statements from, that your advisor, your certified kingdom advisor, set you up with. The couple of ways to get that money out is the key is you don't want it to come payable to you. So you don't want it to be paid to you in a check or electronically, because then it's a distribution. What you want it to do is to be paid directly to the charity, and then you need proof of that. So the ways you can get the money to the charity is to initiate a qualified charitable distribution with the custodian, and then they'll electronically transfer it to the charity. You'll want to let the charity know that it's coming, and then you'll want to get the receipt showing that it was received directly from the custodian so that you can document that on your taxes and it's not added to your taxable income. But what I've also been told from CPAs is that if you have check writing privileges on the IRA, so long as you make the check out to the charity, then that's the other way to do the qualified charitable distribution. And again, you'd get a receipt of that from the charity. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So it would be like, I would just have to be able to write checks off of that. Because right now I worked for the county, and so it was
do you have a 457 or?
Yeah, 457.
Uh-huh. Okay. So in order to do the qualified charitable distribution, John, you're going to have to roll that over to an IRA. So is this a new relationship you have with the Certified Kingdom Advisor?
Yeah, we're pretty much, I've seen him a couple of times.
Okay. But you haven't moved the money over to him yet?
No. So I wanted to check it out first. That's why I'm calling you. I wanted to make sure
All right. I'm following you. So here's the next step. The next step is you call the CKA and you say, I'm ready to move that 457 over to you. He'll say, great. He'll send you the paperwork to open the IRA at whatever custodian he uses, and then he'll initiate, or his firm will initiate, the rollover from the 457 to the IRA. Then once the money gets into the IRA at some point by the deadline, whatever that deadline is for year one, when you turn 73, he can let you know that. His custodian can also tell you what the amount is you have to take out based on the balance, probably at the end of this year. Then they would initiate the qualified charitable distribution directly to the charity of your choice. Or if he gives you check writing privileges on the IRA once it's open, then you could just write the check directly to the charity. The key is just make sure that money doesn't come payable to you.
I can ask about that check writing. So he didn't mention that, so I'll ask him about that.
Okay.
Yeah, I kind of feel better with that one. Now, I can use that as my tithe, right?
You can. Yeah, you're just going to need the church to know that it's coming from the IRA as a qualified charitable distribution, and they need to give you the documentation on it.
Okay, great.
All right. Okay, yeah, very good.
Sounds like a plan.
Excellent, John. Well, listen, all the best to you. Thanks for calling today. Let me just build off of something John said there for the benefit of our audience. You know, if you are in a situation where you don't need your IRA money and you're over 70 and a half, this is a really good strategy. Now, I love the idea of giving even more than you plan to give. And so if you want to just continue doing your normal, let's say you're tied to the church out of your savings account or your checking account, and then you do the qualified charitable distribution on top of it, that's certainly great. But if you wanted to replace your giving that you were doing out of your checking account with your qualified charitable distribution, well, that's a way for you to essentially, you know, recapture the money you were giving out of after-tax dollars and instead just replace that giving with pre-tax dollars from your IRA. And then you come out ahead. So that's just something to consider there as you're thinking about, again, if you're in a situation where you've got an IRA, you've got a required minimum because you're 73, you don't need the money, you might as well replace the giving you were doing to your church out of cash, after-tax cash, with the pre-tax IRA money, and everybody wins. So something to think about. Hopefully I didn't lose you on that. Well, folks, just a quick reminder, our team is away from the studio today, so don't call in, but we've got some great questions lined up in advance. Back with much more right after this. Stay with us.
You know, President Biden has chosen not to seek re-election, but have you thought about the implications? One of his pet projects is to fill the federal judicial bench with as many liberal judges as possible. As a lame duck president, he'll push the Senate to do just that. We've seen the president's cognitive decline, and we have to urge the Senate to freeze the confirmation process now. Please take time to visit AFA.net, get all the information, and send the email to your senators today. That's AFA.net.
FaithFi is grateful for support from OneAscent. OneAscent believes that your values inspire why you invest and how they can inspire how you invest. OneAscent's goal is to provide solutions designed for every need and invest in businesses that bless the people and places God has made. They want to help investors do well by doing good, to explore a new way of investing that aligns with your values. More information is available at OneAscent.com and by clicking Analyze My Investments.
I think it's safe to say most people have seen the I Want You, Uncle Sam poster. It inspired many to join the war effort in World War I. More than 100 years later, AFA Action needs your help to fight a war that rages in our culture. To answer the call to action, please sign up for Action Alerts today, and if you would, give to AFA Action so we can stay on the front lines. You'll get the Christian Handbook for Civic Engagement as our thanks. Visit AFAAction.net today.
We are grateful for support from the Eventide Center for Faith and Investing. ECFI is an educational initiative of Eventide Asset Management that seeks to help Christians understand and practice biblically faithful investing. They do this through their podcast and online journal featuring articles from industry thought leaders and their course called Discover God's Story for Investing. More information is available at faithandinvesting.com. That's faithandinvesting.com.
Hi, I'm Riley Wellman, director of the AFA Foundation. One of my main things that I like to do is visit with our supporters, whether it's traveling or just on the phone. We just love to meet with people, and if they have a complicated situation, we would love to sit down and talk with them. You can visit us at afafoundation.net or give us a call at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Are you a financial advisor or CPA seeking to build your practice on biblical wisdom? Not only does the Certified Kingdom Advisor education provide you with deep biblical insights, the CKA designation sets you apart. Each year, almost 50,000 people search for a Christian financial advisor. Join our community and share your expertise with clients looking for someone who shares their faith and values. Find more information at kingdomadvisors.com/getcertified.
Delighted to have you with us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Let's head back to the phones. We'll head to Chicago. Hi, Vanessa. How can we serve you?
Hi. I have some questions, or actually, if you could offer some suggestions. I just recently came into an inheritance, and I wanted to give some tips on investing. All of my savings is fine. My checking is fine, and I also have a 401k. I don't just want to put that money into any of those accounts. I want to do some investing.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. A couple of questions. So you said your savings is good. So meaning you have 3 to 6 months expenses in an emergency fund?
Yes, I do.
Okay. And you're living on a budget within your means every month. So you're not going underwater. You've got a little bit of surplus every month.
Yes, I do.
Yep. Awesome. And then with your 401k, do you know what percent of your income you're contributing currently?
Actually, it's 5% now. So, and that's okay. Our match with the company that I'm with is 5%. So I'm matching what they're matching with us for us. So yeah, so
okay.
5%. We did have a financial company come in a couple of weeks ago, and I can raise that. So I am going to raise that as soon as they get everything in place. I will be raising that percentage that comes out for the 401k.
Okay. Yeah, that would be good because you can put in up to $23,000 for a 401k for the year 2024. And then if you're over the age of 50, you can go up to $30,500. So you can put in quite a bit. I mean, you'd certainly want to max out at the very least, the matching portion. But I like the idea of you putting in, you know, perhaps as much as 15% of your pay if you can. And I guess the next question related to that is, how do you feel like you're doing, or do you have a sense of how you're doing towards your ultimate retirement savings goal? Do you feel like you're on track, or do you know?
I'm kind of on track, but this will definitely help me get in the inheritance. It'll definitely help, but I am going to continue to work because I'm in, I guess I say, perfect health, you know, so I intend to work until full retirement age. I'm really close, though. So,
okay, what is your age currently?
63.
Okay, and what do you have, if you don't mind me asking, in the 401k, and then what was the total of the inheritance?
Okay, in the 401k, there's about $40,000, and the inheritance was over $200,000.
Okay, all right, great. Yeah, I think the key for you is to perhaps do some retirement planning. I mean, you could do some basic planning on your own. I'd recommend you connect with an advisor who can help you do that planning and determine kind of what your ultimate savings goal is for your retirement assets. Are you going to have anything other than your 401k, the inheritance, and Social Security? Like, will you have a pension or anything like that?
No, my company doesn't have a pension. So
okay.
That'll be it as far as my 401k and Social Security.
Yeah. So I love that you said you're in good health and you plan to continue to work. The key will be for you to work up that retirement budget so you can figure out, okay, here's how much I need to live on in retirement, whatever that number is. Then you subtract from that what you'll get at Social Security, and I'd wait as long as you can to take that, and that's good that you're going to continue to work, so that would allow that check to continue to grow. But then whatever is left with your total monthly need minus Social Security, that's got to come as a monthly income stream from the combination of the inheritance and the 401k. And the way we need to look at that is, ideally, you would be able to pull no more than 4% a year, and that 4% a year from your investments plus Social Security would meet your monthly obligations. And if you can do that, and if you invest it properly, then you should be able to allow that money to maintain its principal, and you be able to live off of the income, because the growth of the investments and the income inside those investments will offset your withdrawal rate of 4%. Now, if you needed 6 or 7 or 8%, typically you're not able to maintain that in that season of life, because usually you get more conservative, and that's where we could see those balances decline over time. And then the question would be, you know, are you going to outlive the money? But if we can build those assets to a point where you can just pull no more than 4% a year, so let's say we're talking $300,000, 4% a year would be $12,000. So the question would be, is $12,000 plus Social Security enough for you to live on? Or, you know, we could make that $400,000, you know, if we're planning on that growing plus what you're adding in your 401k. Well, then you could pull $16,000 a year, that type of thing. But I think the key is to try to get as much into that 401k as possible, because what we want here, Vanessa, is we want that growing in a tax-deferred environment. The inheritance is great, and you can certainly take it and deploy it into the market. The only challenge is that as you invest it outside of a retirement plan, as you have profits in individual investments, you're going to have to pay capital gains on them every time you sell them. Whereas inside the 401k, the taxes are not a factor while it's growing. And so you or your advisor can buy or sell investments as much as you want. There's never any taxes. The tax is paid when you take it out. And so that's why I would love for you to max out that 401k, put that full $30,500 in this year, even if that means you've got to live off of a portion of the inheritance, because what you're doing is you're systematically moving the inheritance from a taxable environment where it is today into a pre-tax environment in the 401k. Does that make sense, though?
Okay. It makes a lot of sense, and especially considering I don't have any debt, any personal debt, so me continuing to live off of my income from my employment is fine, so I can definitely see myself doing that.
Yeah, that's great. The other thing I would recommend to you, Vanessa, is I think you're in a great position to connect with an advisor for two reasons. Number one is you can do some more in-depth retirement planning, so you know what your ultimate retirement savings goal is. And we don't need to overaccumulate. I mean, if you can reach it before retirement, great. You can accelerate your giving, but you need to know what that is. So along the way, you'll know, am I on track, ahead, or behind? The second thing is, I think having an advisor who could help you manage the money, not only selecting the investments inside the 401k from the menu that your employer gives you, but also helping you make the investment decisions for the inheritance. It's a lot of money, and we don't want to just put it on autopilot. So to find a CKA to interview, I'd go to faithfi.com and click Find a Professional. Thanks for your call. We'll be right back. That's how many pairs of shoes the average American has in their closet. 1. That's how many pairs of shoes it takes to share health, education, opportunity, and the love of Christ to a child in need in the world. You can play a part in changing the life of a child today through Buckner Shoes for Orphan Souls. Visit giveshoestoday.org and find out how you can provide shoes for a child in need. That's giveshoestoday.org.
Here's Pastor Jeff Shree with From His Heart Ministries.
How many people come to church and they're chained to a bitter spirit and all sorts of problems, chained to greed and selfishness? Even when they want to break free, they can't seem to break free. Worship Him and praise Him and let Him remove the chains.
Learn to break the chains forever through Christ. Join Pastor Jeff Shreve on From His Heart, weeknights at 6 Central, here on American Family Radio.
Faith and Finance is grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing. For more than 30 years, they've offered financial wisdom for living well. SMI provides step-by-step guidance for do-it-yourself investors, from those just getting started to those getting ready for retirement. More information, including a short video webinar on profit and peace of mind no matter what's happening in the market,
is available at soundmindinvesting.org.
Are you looking for a financial professional who aligns with your biblical values? Certified Kingdom Advisors are trusted financial, legal, or accounting professionals who have completed a rigorous certification program to ensure they provide biblically wise financial advice as part of their practice. You can find a local CKA professional in your area by going to faithfi.com and clicking Find a CKA.
Is God calling you to ministry? It's time to multiply your capacity for ministry with an affordable degree. The Bachelor of Arts in Christian Ministry at Wesley Biblical Seminary is the degree for you. When God called you to ministry, He called you to preparation. This degree is the education that you need to put all the pieces together for an amazing life of ministry. You will graduate with a confidence for ministry that is backed up by your competence in the scriptures, theology, and ministry. Come learn with a trusted seminary that will help you become a faithful leader. Learn more at wbs.edu.
Frustrated by your health insurance? Confused by the network restrictions and increasing premiums? There's a better way. Christian Healthcare Ministries. CHM is a Christian community delivering a faith-based solution to the high cost of healthcare. Take back control of your healthcare with the ability to choose a provider you trust with no network restrictions and savings of up to 40%. Learn more and enroll today at chministries.org/faithfi. That's chministries.org/faithfi.
This is American Family Radio, a listener-supported ministry of the American Family Association.
Thanks for joining us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. A quick reminder, our team is away from the studio, so don't call in, but we've got some great questions we lined up in advance. We're going to head right back to the phones. Cleveland, Ohio is where we're headed next. Jim, you'll be next up, sir. Go ahead.
Hey, Rob. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, my question is, I have a whole life policy that I've had for over 30 years, closer to 40, and I'm retired. I can I have money built up inside there, and it's set up so that I could take a loan against it, but I don't see myself doing that. And my children are grown, and I just heard, and I don't know how accurate it is, that I could sell this policy and then collect the money from there or just turn it in and alleviate, you know, or get rid of the policy. But I was hoping you could give me some insight and the best way to use this policy or get rid of the policy.
Yeah, very good, Jim. You know, if you no longer have dependents and no longer need the death benefit, you can absolutely surrender the policy and take the cash value. You probably won't have much, if any, of a penalty since you've had the policy 30 years, and then you could invest that money. You know, keep in mind that the amount you receive back that's above the policy basis will be taxable. And so you'd want to calculate the taxable amount upon surrendering it and then subtract the cost basis from the, you know, cash value received. That's generally going to be taxable income. But do you know what that amount is?
I'm not sure at this point. I know the policy is about $100,000. But I think the amount above and beyond that I have in it is closer to, you know, maybe $5,000 to $8,000 in excess. So I put into it so that I could, you know, borrow more if necessary.
Yeah. So what are they saying your cash value is today?
Like $8,000 is above and beyond, $100,000 plus the $8,000 if I was to pass.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, so if you collapse the policy, you lose the $100,000 in death benefit. You no longer have the premium, and they write you a check for $8,000.
Yes.
Yeah, and that probably makes sense. I mean, the key is this: you're going to end up chewing up that money. I mean, either those premiums are going to increase, or you're going to deplete the cash value. I mean, I know you've had it a long time, but you did have the death benefit. Fortunately, you didn't need to use it. But given that you've got other assets, nobody's counting on you for this money, you could probably use that money by recapturing that annual premium back into your budget for other purposes, saving or giving or investing. And so I'm on board with that idea of just letting this policy go.
Very good. And there's nobody that actually purchases these so they can take advantage of the low-cost loans that they put on or they would give to me, right?
No, I mean, that there is something called a viatical settlement where they could buy policies, but typically you'd have to be, you know, have a terminal condition of some kind, or, you know, this policy would, there'd have to be a reason why they would want to buy it. And if you're in relatively good health, I mean, this is not going to be an attractive policy for somebody to buy. So generally you would either just continue to pay on it for the purpose of earning the death benefit, or you just surrender it, take the cash value and let it go at that point.
Thank you very much.
All right. God bless you, Jim. Thanks for calling today, sir. Let's go to Tampa. Hi, Ryan. Go ahead.
Hey, Rob. I'm 38, single. I just recently lost my good-paying job and trying to figure out what to do with my house. Thinking maybe about selling it, renting out the whole thing, renting out a room, and just trying to get a, you know, some wisdom and advice here.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry to hear about losing the job. I mean, the good news is that we're still in a relatively strong job market. But let me ask, do you have a new job at this point?
I do. I had to take something. I decided to take something that's paying significantly less. So, and I think it would, you know, the chances of finding another job that paid as well, you know, if I was able to find one, would probably take a significant amount of time.
Okay. Yeah, no, that makes sense. So let's talk through kind of where you're at. So, I mean, one approach would be to say, you know, if we look at your new budget based on your new lower income, you know, one gauge that would tell us kind of how far out of whack, if you will, this home is in terms of the payment, is to use the gauge of 25% of your take-home pay for principal, interest, taxes, and insurance. I mean, do you have a sense of kind of where this fits in light of your new income and what the gap is there that you're solving for?
Yeah, and I think, you know, it'll probably be eating up around 50% of my new income.
Okay, yeah. So we either need to sell it or get a renter there. So what? Tell me the situation on the home. What is it worth and what do you owe on it?
It's worth about anywhere from $350 to $380, and I owe around $300 on it.
Okay. All right. And so you're single, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And do you have anybody that a church or a friend or family member that is looking for a place, or would you just be kind of advertising this to the general public?
Yeah, I imagine I'd advertise it to the general public. And, okay, you know, if I were going to rent it out, yeah, either one room or rent out the whole house.
Got it. Yeah. And do you have any kind of savings?
I do. I've got, you know, probably around $50,000 in savings across a couple of, you know, one 401k, and then the rest is in the stock market. And I've got an emergency fund as part of the savings as well.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I mean, the challenge is if you try to go buy something else, you know, you don't have a whole lot of equity in this, because after you sell it, you're going to eat up a good bit of that equity that you've got. I mean, if you end up paying the kind of the traditional 6%, or even let's say it's lower than that, let's say you just, you know, pay 3% because the buyer is paying their real estate commission. I mean, you're going to have at least probably 10 to 15,000 in expenses, I would imagine, with moving and everything else. So you'd have 35,000 remaining. Would you be looking to rent for your where you would move to, assuming you didn't stay and rent out a room, or would you be looking to buy?
Yeah, I think renting would be most practical.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I mean, the downside of this is if you just try to make it a straight rental, I mean, we're in a pretty good economy right now. The challenge is, what if a year from now or 2 years from now, we're in a pretty deep recession and, you know, you're not able to rent it out and you're trying to cover the mortgage and a lower paying job. And so probably what's a bit safer is either to stay and rent out a room, because I would imagine you have a low mortgage interest rate, or just to sell it, be done with it. You add 35,000, you know, or 40 to your savings, and then, you know, rent something and try to get back to a situation where maybe you look to improve your job situation over time. I think that's the lowest risk opportunity right now, just because we don't know what we have going on in the future. And, you know, you're pretty out, you know, we've got the budget not right-sized at this point, just given how much debt you're carrying, and you probably don't have enough in the way of assets to really justify being a landlord. So I would say, unless you have a real good prospect on renting out that room, I'd probably be looking to move to sell it, get into a rental, bolster your savings, and let's work on getting your income back up over time. That's best advice. Thanks for your call, Ryan. We'll be right back.
As you pour your love into raising a child with special needs, it's common to struggle with feelings of isolation and doubt, guilt. But you're not alone. On the next Focus on the Family, you'll hear from three moms about the unique struggles and joys of raising a child with special needs. Next time on Focus on the Family with Jim Daly.
Focus on the Family is heard each weekday morning at 5 o'clock Central on American Family Radio.
What would you do?
Aunt Sadie, I appreciate your thought behind the gift card, but I just can't take it. I promise not to shop at Target because they allow men in areas that need to be private and protected for women and children. I hope you'll go to afa.net/Target and learn about it. I'm not giving them my money.
Aunt Sadie didn't know about AFA's call to boycott Target, but she knows now, and so do you. Learn even more at afa.net/Target. afa.net/Target.
Every day we hear life-changing stories from listeners just like you who see money and possessions as tools to invite more people into God's kingdom. Instead of chasing wealth, you've chosen to embrace God as your source of love and provision. At FaithFi, we're passionate about meeting people where they live and work through our national radio program, app, resources, and website to influence widespread positive change in our culture. Please consider becoming a monthly partner at faithfi.com/give.
We are grateful for support from Timothy Plan. Are you unsure if your investments align with your values? Well, for nearly three decades, the goal of the Timothy Plan has been to guide clients on a biblically responsible journey with its mutual funds and ETFs. More information is available at timothyplan.com. Investing includes risk, including possible loss of principal. Before investing, carefully consider funds, investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses contained in the prospectus available at timothyplan.com. Read carefully before investing. Mutual funds distributed by Timothy Partners LTD and ETFs distributed by Foresight Fund Services LLC.
I'm grateful to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. Sit back and enjoy. We're going to cover a lot of ground here in our final segment. We'll get to as many calls as we can. Let's head to Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Eric. Go ahead.
Hey, Rob. How's it going? Thank you so much for what you do. First off, I just wanted to say that.
I appreciate that.
Basically, here's my situation. I'm 47 years old, and I'm an investor, and I've been working on renovations. I just finished a renovation on a very large duplex, and I'm having a little trouble renting it out partially because of the border crisis. There's a lot of foreign people that are coming in, and they don't speak English. But so I'm trying to decide if I should sell this property, because it's been my primary residence, so I've lived there 2 out of the last 5 years, so I wouldn't have to pay the capital gains. So I'm trying to decide if I should just cash in, reinvest that into either a money market account for the next year or so, or just keep on trying to push through and trying to find tenants to get it rented out. Because I know the long play, it makes more sense to keep it and to rent it out because, you know, in time, the value will keep increasing over the years. So I'm just at a crossroads trying to decide if I should sell or if I should just keep trying to find tenants to rent it.
Yeah. It's a great question. So if you were to sell it, do you have a sense of where you would go?
Yes, I have a house that I would be moving into.
Oh, so you already own the home?
Yes.
Okay. And so you live in one side of the duplex right now, and then the other side is what you're trying to rent out, but you're having some trouble.
Yes.
Okay. Very good. And have you consulted with a real estate professional? I mean, you may have been doing this for a long time, and maybe you know yourself, but you know, I realize you mentioned one scenario, but we're still in a fairly strong real estate market. I mean, is there something else related to the property or the location, or is it overpriced? I mean, have you considered what it might take to get more folks in there to at least consider it?
I think I'm just super picky. And since it's my property, I just, you know, want to find the highest quality. And since the location is decent, but it's not like Belmead or Green Hills, you know, one of the top tier locations. That's the only thing. So I'm kind of, you know, stuck with what I can get kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, I think, you know, ultimately it's going to come down to what is the better investment. And so if you were to sell it, both sides of it, move into the other property that you own, what would you net out of that sale?
Let's see, paid $400, looking to get $650, and probably invest. I did a really good job on, the amount I had to pay for the full renovations. It only came out to $33,000 for renovating both sides, which is kind of a miraculous thing. So all in all, I think I'd be profiting around $350-ish, I want to say.
Okay. All right. Very good. And if you had that $350, what would you do with it? Would you buy another piece of property, or would you invest it in the stock market?
Temporarily for the next year, what I'd look to do is probably put it in a money market account until I can find a nice piece of land, because I want to eventually do homesteading and grow my own food. And I want to do that now, but time-wise, I'm just not able to. But that would be the next play.
Okay, got it. Yeah, I mean, I think the key here is, first of all, you'd need to check with a CPA. I mean, typically, if one half was a rental property, you would typically only get the exclusion on the principal residence from your portion. So you just need to understand the implications of that on the portion that was not your primary residence. But beyond that, I think the key is, what are your long-term plans and what is the better opportunity? You know, and if you're looking to redeploy this money elsewhere in the next few years anyway, because you have plans to buy some land, this might be a good time to go ahead and get out. I mean, we know inventories are building quickly, and so it's quickly moving from a seller's market to certainly more of a buyer's market. We also know that there's the potential for a recession down the road. The economy is already slowing. We still have inflation that's a little stickier than the Fed was hoping for, around 3%, not near their target of 2% yet. And the question is whether they can even get there. And so if perhaps a red hot real estate market like Nashville, which has been really strong, is going to, you know, not necessarily see a lot of declines, but at least a lot more competition in terms of buyers, this may be a good time, because your time horizon is already fairly short given the other goals that you have in the next several years. And on top of that, because you're having trouble renting it out, and because you're an owner there as well, you have potentially a little bit higher scrutiny that you're imposing upon your potential renters because you're their neighbor. I think for all those reasons, maybe this is the time to go ahead and sell it, account for any taxes you would owe, capital gains for the portion that wasn't your primary residence, and then take advantage of these high interest rates and get ready to make that next purchase. That at least makes sense to me based on what I heard today.
Yeah, it's my understanding that that I wouldn't have to pay capital gains because I did not rent it out for the 2 years I was there.
Okay,
on the other side. Does that sound about right?
So you never did, is that right?
Yeah, because I was renovating both sides.
Okay, and you didn't depreciate that side of it either?
I think I did on this last year, the standard deduction.
Okay. So that's all you took is the standard deduction. Yeah, potentially that's the case. I'm not a CPA, so I think this would be a good question to run by a tax professional. But certainly that does change things, I would imagine, given that you never did rent it out. You had the intention to do so, but you never did. You've been working on, you've been living there in one half of it. You've been renovating it. And so perhaps there is a way to take that exclusion on both sides, but I would check with the tax preparer just to be sure. But hopefully that helps you. Listen, all all the best to you, Eric. Sounds like a great plan you have in the future. The question is just how to get between here and there, and I'm confident you'll determine that by prayerful consideration. Thanks for being on the program. Let's go to Benel in Illinois. Go ahead.
My question is, how do you determine whether a reverse mortgage would be beneficial?
Yes. So, you know, when we think about reverse mortgages, I mean, these have historically gotten a bad rap. I think they are a legitimate planning tool to be considered. They're not for everyone, but if you have at least 50% equity in the home, you're 62 years of age or older, you're sitting on a massive asset. If you have a conviction to get out of debt and stay there, I think that's great. I wouldn't even consider taking out a loan, reverse or otherwise. But if you don't have the assets you need to cover your expenses, and or you have quite a bit of equity in the house, don't intend to move, or perhaps you have certain projects or renovations you want to do, and by taking a conventional mortgage and then therefore having a payment, that would, you know, create a squeeze on perhaps an already limited income, I think that's where a reverse mortgage can shine. The benefits of the reverse mortgage are, at least today's variety of a HECM, a home equity conversion mortgage, is in terms of the kind of debt it is, it's non-recourse. And what that simply means is the only thing that is guaranteeing that loan is the value of the home. And so regardless of what the value of the home does, you'll never owe more than the house is worth, which just simply means that, you know, if for some reason the house lost value and they paid you an income stream and you lived to 120, you know, the government would step in and make up the difference between the mortgage balance and the value of the home when it's sold. Secondly, whatever equity remains in the home that you didn't pull out through the reverse mortgage is available for your heirs after the reverse mortgage is paid. So that's a great option. And, you know, it can be the difference between you being able to cover your bills in this season of life and not, because you can get an income stream for the rest of your life. So I think for that reason, or for those reasons, I should say, you know, it is at least a tool to be considered alongside the other financial planning tools in this season of life. But tell me what questions you have on that, Benel.
Well, we have a significant amount of equity, which is about 50%. And our plans would be to move into a in-law apartment that a family member has for us, because we'd be caring for their kids. So we wanted to know if I'm assuming you just have taxes to pay and no mortgage. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah. So you would have to pay the property taxes and the insurance. You would never have a payment. And in terms of how you'd tap that equity, it would either be through a monthly income stream. So based on your age and therefore your life expectancy and the amount of equity that you have, they would determine how much they would pay you every month. And then they'd pay that to you for the rest of your life. And that amount that they pay out to you, plus interest and fees that accumulate over time, would ultimately need to be paid back out of the sale of the home, either at your death or when you sold it. But there's never a payment there. So you can take it as an income stream, or you can take it as a line of credit, where essentially they'd give you a certain amount available to you. And if you didn't take it, it would actually increase every year. And then you could just tap it periodically when you need it. But again, no payments required.
Okay. Well, I think that pretty much answers my question. Yes. Thank you so very much.
You are welcome, Benel. If you want to check into this a bit further, you can check out our friends, our partners at Movement Mortgage. Would be happy to explain to you any questions you might have. Movement.com/faith. Also, if you hold the line, I'll send you a copy of a book called Understanding Reverse that I think will be a helpful resource to you as you explore this further. So stay on the line, Benel. Our team will get your information. We'll get that in the mail to you. Again, it's called Understanding Reverse. It'll be our gift to you. May the Lord bless you, sir. We'll look forward to having you back sometime in the near future. That's going to do it for us today, folks. Thanks to my team, Devin Patrick, Pat Montague, and Jim Henry. Couldn't do it without them. Thank you for being here as well. Hope you have a great rest of your day and come back and join us tomorrow. Lord willing, I'll be here and we'll see you then. Bye-bye.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.